So no matter what it is, we'll be the champions. Oklahoma, we've been it.
Excellence has been established by Coach Wilkinson, Coach Switzer, and Coach Stoops. It's my responsibility to defend that standard and to build upon that standard.
Welcome to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast with your hosts, Jesse Curtin-Biddle and Brian Clark.
Hello, Sooner Nation, OU Insider subscribers, Coach Brian Clinton enthusiasts, people who cannot believe that football season for OU starts in 9 days.
9 days.
We record this on Thursday afternoon. Next Saturday is not only the start of OU's football season, OU college football starts in 2 days. And I think I mentioned this yesterday to you. Off the pod, actually, let me get to the rest of this intro. This is the podcast for you. This is another episode of the Oklahoma Drill, a podcast fueled by OU Insider and On Three Dash Rivals. I am Jesse Crittenden, and I am joined, as always, by Mr. Hat, Mr. Brian Clinton. Mr. Clinton, how are you, sir?
I like the haircut. Looks
Thanks,
good.
Man.
Looks Thanks, good. Man. Very clean.
It is. It's football season, and it's hot. It's hot as hell outside, yeah, so I thought it's time to... And it's also better for hats. I actually meant to wear my Thunder championship hat, and I forgot I was going to wear it.
Shame on you.
I like your hat. What do you got going
on there? Made for community. I'm a community pastor, so figured better rep the gear a little bit. So you need to get into a group, holler at me. I got you.
I like that. It would have been funny, though, you're a community pastor, if you wore a hat that was like, I hate community. I don't like fellowship. I really don't like people very much.
That's So not really a people person.
Kind of an introvert. Actually, I'm going to make you that hat.
That's great.
Just because I think it'd be funny.
Deal.
I said this to you because we were going to record this pod yesterday, and then we didn't because you had responsibilities or adult stuff or whatever.
Something.
Grown up stuff. It didn't even really occur to me that college football starts in 2 days. Kansas State, Iowa State. We actually have like a real football game.
Cannot wait for that. I'm pretty excited.
Do you have a pick for the Big 12? Because I don't really know what's going on in the Big 12. I'll be completely honest.
I don't have a confident pick. I think I would, if I had to make a pick, it'd be Kansas State. My dark horse would be Utah, though.
I like that.
Really like who Utah went out and got at offensive coordinator, and then they got Devin Dampier. I think he was like fifth nationally in total offense last year, quarterback at New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they should be a lot better this year.
Well, I'm genuinely not knowledgeable enough to talk about the Big 12 in depth. I will say, I still don't think we have fully acknowledged how insane it is that Oklahoma State went 3-9 last year, that they didn't win a single Big 12 game.
Yeah.
And I know it's like been 8 months now, and I'm still like, guys, Oklahoma State didn't win a conference game last year.
Right.
So I say that to say my hot take is I think they'll win one. They'll win a conference game. Surely? Maybe they won't.
Yeah.
I think Mike Gundy said he didn't have an update on quarterback situation today.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's quite interesting. We'll see how that goes. I don't know, man.
It'd be good to find out who your quarterback is, probably.
That probably would be good. Yeah.
Probably helpful. But I mean, I guess you don't have to. I mean, Auburn's rolling out all three.
Yeah.
All three of their guys.
Roll. You can just roll.
So the saying that if you're playing two quarterbacks, you don't have a quarterback. What is it when you have three? You have negative one quarterbacks?
Yes, you have problems. If you've got three quarterbacks, you've got problems.
What did Jay-Z say? I have 99 problems and quarterbacks are all of them.
Correct.
Every single pro. That's what Hugh Freeze is saying.
That's yes. The famous line. Yes.
Let's talk about OU football. We will, We will talk more about Illinois State next week and just the fascinating matchup that I'm sure that that is going to be. We'll talk about that next week, but let's make this. This was your idea, and this is a good idea. And actually,
thank you for that.
It was you.
They don't happen often, but I appreciate the credit.
Once a football season, rough and give or take, you had a good idea. We're going to make this a preseason predictions pod. This is the one. We're going to fit all of them in the next 45 minutes. Probably not all of them, but we're going to do a lot of them. I wrote some preseason predictions about the offense for OU Insider earlier today, but we're going to do a pod and we're going to talk about everything, offense and defense. I think we have to culminate it in, we have to be on the record about what we think OU's record is going to be in the regular season. That's how we're going to culminate this whole thing. So if you want to find out how we think OU is going to do in the regular season, we're going to get to that to the end. Let's start with some preseason predictions. And I'm going off the list you sent for one. Okay. So, and there are some really, really good ones. And some of these will be predictions. Some of these will be guesses, all that kind of stuff. I'm going to start here. Let's start with John Mateer.
Okay.
I predicted that he will finish with 4,000 total yards.
Okay, total
yards. 4,000 total yards. Okay. For reference, he had like 3,950, I think, a season ago. Mm-hmm. So let's say this. I put the over-under at 3,999.5. That's the over-under of total yards.
Okay.
Is he going over or under that? Make the call.
Under.
Ooh.
Now, hear me out. Washington State was not a good defensive football team last year.
No, it was not.
At all. It just wasn't. So, I think John Mateer could still have a fantastic season. And a Heisman worthy seat. Like if he was to have his stat line from last year in the SEC, he's probably your Heisman winner. Like, I mean, that's, it just is the level of competition that the teams he's playing against, like that would be nuts. So I'll go under. Now, I don't think it is that far under because the level of talent around him is elevated. But I just don't think Oklahoma is going to be in a situation where they necessarily need that from him. And there were times in 24 when Wazoo absolutely needed everything that he could give them.
No, I think it's reasonable to say under. And I actually think if me predicting he would finish with 4,000 total yards is a little bit of a reach because I'm an analyst. I'm a data guy. I don't just make calls willy nilly. I don't make predictions. I looked at the stats, Brian. You know how many quarterbacks finished with 4,000 total yards or more last year? Don't take a guess.
Six.
Four.
Dang.
Only one from the SEC. That's Jackson Dart. So then I started looking at, and John Mateer barely missed the cut, 3965. So he was fifth and barely missed the cut. So then I started looking at, well, how does John Mateer get to 4,000 yards? One of the reasons why he was close last year is because he had a ton of rushing yards. He had over 800.
Yep.
So my thought is, I don't know if he's going to get to 800 rushing yards. I just, OU's got too many.
Impressed. That would be impressed.
Yeah. Be really impressive. I think he can have a good year running the ball and not even get close to 800.
Yeah.
Maybe like 500, 600.
Mm-hmm.
OU's just got too many guys. And unless the running back room dies like the wide receiver room did last year, I don't think he's going to have to run the ball that much.
Right.
And he'll still be an active part of the running game. I'm very confident about that. So then I started thinking, well, could a split look like 3,500 passing yards, 500 rushing yards? Even to get to that, because he had just under 3,200 passing yards, to get to 3,500 passing yards is a lot. You know how many guys got to that mark last year?
In the SEC or total?
Total. That's 3,500 passing yards.
8.
12.
Dang.
So it's if you're saying 4,000 total yards like I am, you're saying he's a Heisman Trophy candidate.
Yeah.
Unless OU wins 4 games. So you're not unreasonable to say under. You're not. Okay. Let's go to the next one. I think this can, I'm going to ask this as two different questions. It can be the same answer. Who do you think leads OU in receptions? And who do you think leads OU in receiving yards? Is it the same guy or is it two different guys? Because for me, it's two different guys. But who would you say?
I'm going to say receptions and receiving yards is one guy, but receiving touchdowns is another.
I like that. Tell me, who do you got?
But I would say your receiving leader is going to be Isaiah Satania.
That's who I said.
I think that's a pretty safe bet. But like as of right now, that would be. And then I think your touchdowns leader, I think it's Jelani Gibson. I think he gets back and I think he's like your explosive. I think he's probably your guy that has some breakaway, some touchdowns over the top. I think Satania is going to be the guy that eats a lot of things over the middle. Gibson's got a little more of an opportunity to be a guy that you focus on more in like the red zone. So
it's so hard to, I like the answer.
And I just left Deion Burks out, but like, I mean,
it's the Deion part of it is so both the Deion and the Jovani, like to try to sort out, like we haven't seen Jovani participate in on-field drills
right
since the spring.
Yeah.
Now I think he's the number one guy for this offense when he comes back, which also makes it hard to like, what is that dynamic going to look like when it's him and Deion and Isaiah all on the field
right
together? That's why to me, the one sure thing to me is that Satania leads this team in receptions.
Yeah.
And that's what I've predicted. And it's not only because they've moved him to the slot. He's the slot guy. It's not Deion Burks. It's Satania. Mm-hmm. Not only just because he was good there with Arkansas last year, but I looked at Washington State's offense last year with Mateer and his slot receivers. Josh Meredith, who was basically the full-time slot guy last year, more or less, 39 receptions, 472 yards, 2 scores. Chris Hudson, who played there a little over half the time in the slot, 54 receptions, 643 yards. To me, I think that's the kind of season I'm projecting for Satania. Like if you put the over under it at 55 receptions, that's a lot actually. I'm confident he'll get over 50. I think he'll catch over 50 passes.
Yeah.
If Jovani is back, which I would be pretty surprised if Jovani plays week 1. That would surprise me.
Huge news just dropped right in the middle of our pod.
What's going on?
For the SEC.
9 conference games?
The official 9 conference games. It will start in 2026.
Wow.
That is official now. Per Pete Thamel of ESPN.
Well, and this comes just... what was it? Was it yesterday that the playoff committee announced they would weigh opponent
Tuesday?
I lose.
It was this week.
It was this week that they were making some slight changes to how they were evaluating resumes for. Yep. I don't think it's any coincidence that they announced that they're gonna evaluate. I don't remember the exact language, but basically they were gonna take strength of schedule more into account, more or less, and then SEC's moving to 9 conference games. I think it was inevitable. Mm-hmm. To be honest,
I mean
with
everybody
you.
Else is doing it. Like. It makes sense.
It does. And I mean, I think both from a, you don't want to get left behind standpoint. It's hard to say that you're the best conference when you don't have the, when the Big Ten and the Big 12 play more conference games than you do.
Right.
And then I think to add on top of that, just from a product standpoint, OU is playing Kent State and Illinois State this year and Temple this year.
Yeah.
And they're not the
and
only
still
one
has this, and still has the second hardest schedule in the country.
Yeah. Which I'm not, look, I'm not,
like, but just nuts.
I'm not even throwing shade at Oklahoma. There hasn't been incentive to schedule a bunch of marquee non-conference games.
No.
But so so then that makes me wonder, because for, I mean, OU has played the same SEC opponents the last 2 years. How does a 9-game schedule affect that?
Don't know. The thing that is where my mind goes immediately is teams like South Carolina that have Clemson out of conference already. Mm-hmm. My gosh, that schedule is just brutal. That's just brutal. I mean, 10-year games are toss-ups every year.
Right.
That's just nuts.
It is. I'm just curious. I mean, are they going to move to the, you have one.
Odds or,
yeah. But that means OU is going to play, at minimum, they're going to play somebody next year.
That they've already played.
That they've already played the last 2 years, and that doesn't include Texas.
Right.
So who's that going to be? How are they going to decide that? That's going to be interesting.
My guess would be LSU. Like, I don't know why, but like that just feels like the, it's just random fish in a barrel, but that's my guess.
LSU, I mean, it does feel notable that LSU has been the last regular season game for OU the last 2 years. Yeah. So like maybe it's, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's interesting that the announcement comes. I mean, it's been a little over a month since SEC Media Days, and the season starts in just a few days. Interesting. Okay. Well, I'm curious to
derail the pod here, but yeah, no, that is, it's significant.
No, it is. But also, it was a question of how OU was going to fill its non-conference schedule.
Right.
Now you have one less non-conference game to schedule.
Yep.
Because who do they play next year? God. I don't remember that off the top of my head.
Michigan at Michigan.
It's at Michigan.
And I don't remember the other ones.
Hold on. I'm pulling it up right now because it's going to kill me. UTEP, Michigan, New Mexico. So they were going to have to schedule one other non-conference game, and now they don't have to.
Yep.
So now it's just going to be about who they play in conference play.
Sorry, Maine.
Damn. I was really hoping to see Maine again. Okay, what were we talking about? Oh, so Isaiah Satania, I think he's a safe bet to lead this team in receptions. Yep. And then, I mean, it's the wide receiver room in general, though, man, because when does Giovanni come back? I bet it's week two. What does he look like when he does? How does Deion Burks look on the perimeter? And then you've got a whole list of guys, and Zion Kearney and Elijah Thomas and Keontez Lewis and Ivan Carrion. It's like, how does this, I mean, you've got 1 week to figure out what you want that wide receiver rotation to look like. And it may not include Giovanni Gibson.
Correct.
Which throws a wrench in things.
Yep.
I'll say right now, Deion Burks leads the team in receiving yards.
Okay. I could see that.
I think Giovanni Gibson leads the team in touchdowns.
Yep.
Does that work?
Yep. Like that.
Okay.
Dark horse to lead in receiving touchdowns. I mean, it just totally depends on how the season plays out, but, Jade Knott feels like a guy that could have, like, could sneak into being one of those top two or three guys, like in touchdown receptions, which would be odd, but
it would be odd. Speaking of Jaden Ott, we ought to talk about Jaden Ott. How many Ottly? Ott jokes am I going to make in the span of 30 seconds? Not enough. You can always make more. Speaking of him, and also because of his receiving yards, which is part of why I made this prediction, I think Jaden Ott reaches 1,400 total yards. I'm going to set the over-under, similar to Mateer, 1,399.5. Are you going
total
over?
Yards.
Total yards. Total yards. Over-under for Jaden Ott.
I'm going to go over.
I love it.
Yeah.
Tell me why.
Over. I just think that's your... I think that is probably your most dynamic playmaker outside of Mateer. I think, I mean, just, but the guy that can hurt you in multiple ways. And I think as the offensive line improves, the big thing that plays into this for me, I think Ott's production has to make up for the lack of there being an established playmaker at tight end. Now, Caden Helms could end up being a dude, or, you know, Jaron Cannon could end up being a guy that catches, catches on and starts playing really good ball. But I think with those guys being kind of like question marks in my mind, with how this offense is going to have to play, I think Ott is probably the guy that makes up the difference there in the margin. And I think that's why, I mean, I could see him touching 1500 yards, without having to think about too many possibilities. Like it would make sense.
Well, that's part of why I mentioned even like Isaiah Cetania. Like I think he'll get to 50 receptions. It's hard for me to project 55 or more because I think Jay Knott's going to catch a lot of passes.
Correct.
Yeah. And, which I started again, cause I'm a stats guy, big stats guy. OU. So Eric Gray caught 33 passes for OU in 2022. In the last 2 years, OU hasn't had a running back catch more than 17 passes.
That'll change.
That's going to change. It's just going to change. I think Jaden Knott's going to catch a lot of passes. He's got 95 for his career. He caught 46 as a freshman. In 2023, he had almost 1,500 total yards. I think he was just short. It's like 1,480. Mm-hmm. So to me, I almost think it's more interesting to wonder if he'll get to 1,000 rushing yards. And part of why I say that is if I had to guess, I think some of the other running backs are going to get a lot of run, particularly early in the year.
Yeah.
But I think by the midpoint of the season, I think it's Jaden Knott's going to be the pretty clear number one.
Yeah.
And get a workload that reflects that. But I'm wondering, because the Torrey Blaylock has been a legitimate guy in fall camp, which is not what I expected.
Right.
Javonte Barnes has been, like, if you want to talk about the guy who has maybe been like the most rock solid in fall camp, it might be Javonte Barnes. They're going to get, and this, we're not even talking about Xavier Robinson and Taylor Tatum. Like, there's a lot of guys in that room that could deserve touches.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I don't think it would be crazy for Jaden Knott to not even reach 1,000 rushing yards or to barely eclipse it, but still get to 1,500 because of his work as a pass catcher. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if the other guys in that room are going to offer that kind of asset that Jaden Knott can offer.
Yeah. Well, and if somebody else, here's my question. And I don't know. I mean, there's probably not a whole lot of merit to this question, but it does make sense just from the way Oklahoma is structuring things now. If one of those other guys emerges as like somebody you deserves touches and somebody you want to utilize, with how Oklahoma is approaching the personnel decisions and how they're doing things, do we see more of like an NFL style where you've got a third down, you've got third down situations where Ott is like absolutely on the field because he can do everything. But maybe somebody like Xavier Robinson is like, you know, you're going to hand the ball off to him first or second down because you know he's going to get 4 yards. Like, I mean, I'm curious to see how that changes because obviously what's worked to this point, what hasn't worked to this point over the last couple of years has been kind of like this huge question marks. What's going on with the running back room? So,
yeah, I mean, OU has the depth there that if you wanted someone that's more of your first and second down guy, if you want more of a third down guy, if you want a goal line short yardage guy, like you could do that. And there are guys that are bigger bodied in that room that could be more ideal compared to Jaden Knott. But I was going through the numbers from his 2023 season. I was actually almost half of his carries were designed to go between the guards, which I thought was really interesting.
Okay.
So like just full on, just right up the gut.
Yep.
running designs, which was like, okay, so they were using him. They weren't just using him. And also, he averaged almost 4 yards after contact that season.
Was Spavadal his offensive coordinator?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so.
I was trying to remember if he was there before. Yeah, sounds right.
But, I mean, Jaden Ott was one of the most utilized guys in college football 2 years ago. And I think a lot of that was because they were utilizing him in every situation, which is part of why OU got him, was to have a guy that you can do that with. Right. But, like, because the running back room has been weird the last couple of years, and because you have guys in that room, like, it wouldn't shock me if, like, Javonte Barnes or Xavier Robinson is the short yardage guy. Mm-hmm. But it's also going to come down to, like, can Jaden Ott be good enough in pass protection?
Right.
In the SEC.
Yeah, because you don't have that. You probably don't have that tight end that you're feeling really confident about being able to stay in the box and help. So.
Right. Plus, I mean, we didn't see it a ton at Washington State, but what if Arbuckle gets crazy with two running back sets? It would almost kind of be silly not to do that, at least like a little.
A little bit, yeah.
Like a little
bit. Put it on film. Make people prepare for it.
Yeah, even if it's five plays a game, four plays a game.
Yeah.
Just like something.
Yep.
I mean, you could do all kinds of stuff with throw Jaden Ott and Torrey Blaylock or Jaden Ott and Barnes or whatever combo you want and fake some triple option John Mateer keeper stuff, right? Like,
yeah. Make teams prepare for it because however you can spread them out during the week film review and all, like, the more you can get them to dedicate to other things, the better off you're going to be.
Which is part of why, I mean, but I think it is also going to depend on how the offensive line holds up.
Correct.
Which is probably the position group that I think could change the most between now and week six. Let's say Texas, between Illinois State and Texas, because I'll tell you this, the offensive line has changed a little bit even compared to what I thought it was going to be when we talked about it a week ago or 2 weeks ago. I mean, the Hito Zaida and Logan Howland stuff, like, they might be two of your starters week one. They really might. I think the only three positions that as of now are, as of week one, are pretty cut and dry are Troy Everett at center and Derek Simmons and Jacob Sexton at the tackle spots. Or and Fabetchi Wiwu at right guard. Actually, I guess really the only one that I'm getting ahead of myself. I think it's going to depend on, like, I think Jacob Sexton and Derek Simmons are your tackles when everyone's healthy, but I don't know if everyone's going to be healthy or available to play in week one, which is why I think the Hito Zaida, Logan Howland stuff is real. Fabetchi Wiwu had a little bit of a medical scare. Thankfully, he's okay. But he had a little bit of a medical scare earlier this week. I wonder what that does for his availability. But, like, I don't know. I don't think Michael Fasusi is going to start week one. I just don't. And even someone like Eddie Pierre-Louis, I don't know if it's going to start week one. But I bet by Texas week, Eddie Pierre-Louis is the starting left guard.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he will be week one.
Right.
Yeah, it's been a tricky position group in fall camp.
Yeah.
It
has. That's probably the one guy, if I was to pick somebody on offense that's not starting, and I'm taking injuries out of it, like, guy that's listed as a starter in week one, if everyone's healthy, I don't know that Eddie Pierre-Louis is going to be your guy week one at left guard, but I would bet by week six, that's your dude. Like, going into the heat of SEC play, like, I think that's going to be your guy. That's somebody that, and it's probably because I can't get the image of him running down the track in high school out of my mind when I think, like, he's just different, man. And from what we have heard about him through fall camp, like, yes, there are playing under control things that he's going to have to work through, but, like, you want that to be the issue. Hey, I need you to tone it back a little bit, like, play with the ferocity, but, like, have some control. I think that play, that it bodes well for him, especially under a guy like Beanbo.
Which is why in my column earlier today, I predicted he'll play 500 snaps. Because I think that's going to reflect that there's a real battle through the first few weeks and something of a rotation. But I think by the middle of the season, he's your starting left guard.
Yeah,
I think that. He just offers a higher ceiling than someone like Hito Zaida does. But it's going to make sense if Hito Zaida is playing a role, especially early on, because he was top five in snaps played last year.
I did not know that.
He played a lot.
That's so valuable too for a guy in that position. So like, yeah, that's huge.
About the offense as a whole, I want to ask you, because this is what I predicted earlier. I said OU will finish 30th in total offense, 25th in scoring offense. Mm-hmm. Now I have my reasons for why I picked those numbers specifically. I did my data. Okay. I did my research.
Okay.
You tell me, do you think this team can be a top 25 offense in both categories, both total offense, scoring offense? How do you feel?
Yes. As long as they're able to keep enough guys healthy. I mean, you're going to have bumps and bruises along the way, but if you can keep the vast majority of your guys there, I think it sets up for you to be one of those offenses. And what gives me confidence in that is the depth that you have. I mean, God forbid something happens to John Mateer. Like, as long as he's healthy, OU is going to be great. But like having a guy like Mike Hawkins, who has looked the way that he has through fall camp, right behind him, those kinds of things are what give me confidence that the offense can be prolific. Because it's not just at quarterback. You've really got two deep along the offensive line. Like you just mentioned, there's five guys that you can hand the ball off to that have the potential to be special. And then you look at what they've got at wide receiver. There's a plethora of guys that are just waiting to break out. So I think there's plenty there, and that probably has more to say about what I believe in Ben Arbuckle than anything else. I just think the guy is, the comparison's been made a million times, and I'm not going to make it again here, but like he is special. There's a reason he's 29, the offensive coordinator at Oklahoma. Like, the guy knows what he's doing.
I couldn't remember what I predicted for the offense last year. I actually can't access that article anymore. I don't have it on my computer. I can't access it. So I was trying to be like, am I looking at this team through rose-colored glasses because it's the preseason? Sure. So then I was trying to think, like, what is realistic? What is a realistic, not even ceiling, because I think the ceiling is higher than what I've predicted, but what are realistic expectations? Mm-hmm. So then I started looking. So 30th in total offense last year would have been the 7th best in the SEC.
Okay.
25th in scoring offense would have been 4th.
Okay.
So then I compared that with last year, Washington State was 6th in scoring and 17th in total offense. So I thought there's a clear ceiling and a clear upside with this offense that it just didn't have a year ago. Yeah. I think the offensive line will be better. Is it going to be great? I don't know. Surely it'll be better. Also, surely just this offense as a whole. I threw some shade at Oklahoma State earlier. So let me throw some shade at Oklahoma. 97th in scoring offense and 113th in total offense a year ago. Let's just, again, parcel that.
Is that bad?
Let's just parcel that as something that is a reality. 113th in total offense a year ago.
Quit reminding me. It's 2025, Jesse.
Right. We can't look backwards. We got to look forward. I thought picking 30th in total offense and 25th in scoring offense says you have a clearly an above average offense. It's a good offense.
Mm-hmm.
It's both marks would be in the top half of the SEC, but it's also, I think, reflecting the explosiveness of an Arbuckle Mateer offense. While acknowledging that they may not reach the heights they did at Washington State last year because of the increase in competitiveness. This is year one in Norman for Ben Arbuckle. But I think those are realistic expectations. Because I don't think it's reasonable to predict that they're going to be a top five offense. But I think you can. But I think you can. Yeah. I'm not saying they can't be. But
it's not realistic, though.
It's realistic.
Yeah. You could, you know, I think the upside to this offense, and we've had this discussion off air before about how do you really measure how good an offense is? Like, you know, it's efficiency ratings, or, you know, it's yards per carry, yards per pass attempt, you know, those things. And I think that you could see, I would be really surprised if there weren't one or two stats that Oklahoma is, like, the offense is proficient. It, like, is elite in offensively. I don't know what those will be. I mean, if I was to guess, you know, it would have something to do with efficiency, or like, you know, like quarterback, you know, like quarterback efficiency or something along those lines. But I think there will be marks of an elite offense. I don't think you can expect the entire offense to just all of a sudden be 2018 Oklahoma again.
At least it's not reasonable. It's not reasonable to expect that.
Right. Yeah.
But look, if they're 25th in scoring offense or 25th in total offense, team. Like, do you take that? If you're an Oklahoma fan, you take that.
Oh my gosh.
That means you're a college football playoff contender.
Oh yeah.
That's given, then, which we should do a couple on the defense because we've only done about the offense, which that's assuming that the defense can hold steady or improve to what it did last year, which I'll turn it around. So OU last year, 29th in scoring defense, 19th in total defense. So if we're going to say
those are skewed,
and they are skewed, I think they're better. I think both those marks are better if the offense is better. So if we're going to say OU defense is a top 15 defense, let's say they're top 15 in both categories. What would you predict? Are you predicting this defense to be a top, or actually, let me phrase it better. In scoring defense, I'm setting the over under at 14.5. Scoring defense. Okay. Their over under is that they finished 14.5 nationally. Are you going over or better or worse?
Better.
In scoring defense.
I think scoring defense, you're not playing as many elite quarterbacks this year. You just had a lot of guys leave that. But on top of that, I just feel really confident in the fact that when you have an elite defensive line that, like, there are no plays off for the offense, it's just really hard to move the ball with any consistency. And I think that's kind of what I'm basing my opinions on. I think this is a top 10 defense. I really do feel like this team could hold most teams out there to 3 scores or less. I feel pretty confident in that.
I'm going to do defensive predictions tomorrow, but I will say I am very, very confident OU will finish in the top 20 in both scoring and total defense. I feel pretty confident about that. And I think the main thing is the one thing that hurt them last year was their passing defense. That was the one weakness. And even without Billy Bowman, I just think the secondary is going to be better.
I do too. Yep.
I think now I'm very curious. OU is not their cornerback. Their cornerbacks are not going to be healthy for week one.
Right.
Kendall Dolby, Eli Bowen is not going to play. That would very much surprise me. I don't know what Kendall Dolby's situation is going to be. Jacoby Johnson has precautiously been held out, I think, the last few days. I just don't know what that room is going to look like, but I think they're going to be a better secondary. And if they shore up their secondary, I just don't know how they're not I mean, they were 45th in passing yards allowed last year, so it's not like it was like they were awful.
And the defensive line plays a role in that too. Like, where you're, as your defensive line goes, your corners go. If your corners are only having to cover the field for 2.5-3 seconds before the quarterback's running for his life or he's on his back, like that, it helps. So I think it changes a lot.
Who leads the team in tackles?
I'm not going to overthink it. I'll say it's Kobe McKenzie.
Ooh, I like that. Okay.
Just for the system of it. I mean, Kendall Daniels would be a good guess too, but I'll go Colby.
You know who finished second and third in tackles a year ago?
Who?
Robert Spears, Jennings, and Kip Lewis finished second and third in tackles.
Oh, Kip. What am I thinking? Okay, never mind. I'm an idiot. That's, yeah, go ahead.
I'm wrong. I would say Kip Lewis too. Who leads this team in tackles for loss? Okay, actually, with tackles for loss and sacks, it would be hard not to say R. Mason Thomas. So let's say, who is second? Who's second in sacks?
Second in tackles for loss.
Important thing to note here: OU returns six of the top seven guys in sacks a year ago.
Okay,
six of the seven.
Second in sacks, I'm going to go, and this will probably be a safe pick. I think Grayson Halton's second in sacks. That just, it feels like he sets up well. Tackles for loss, I'm going to go David Stone.
I love it.
I think David Stone is a disruptor, and it may not show up as much on in the sacks, but I think that guy is in the backfield so much that it's gonna, he'll be pivotal.
Well, it's funny you say that. So Grayson Halton finished second in sacks a year ago. The guy that finished seventh in tackles for loss last year, Dejon Terry. And that's kind of the role that David Stone is stepping into.
Yeah.
And I think Dejon Terry actually had a good year last year. Dejon Terry was good.
Very solid.
David Stone can be better. David Stone could be better.
Should be.
I mean, and I think he can play more than Terry did, which is saying something, because Terry played 317 snaps last year.
Yep.
He played a healthy amount of snaps. One thing that I forgot about until I was going through the stats was that OU only had 9 interceptions as a team a year ago. That is like the one thing.
That seems weird.
Seems really low.
Yeah.
And only 2 guys had more than 1. So who leads this team in interceptions? It was Kip Lewis and Billy Bowman a year ago.
Right, yeah. Man, with so much pressure, and it's not as easy as it would be with like a regular stand-up defense, because you just pick a corner and run with it. Like, who's your best corner, or who's your second best corner? Who are they going to throw at the most? With a Venables defense, there's pressure coming from everywhere, and so you have guys like Kip Lewis that fall into a so not that he didn't earn those intercepts, but you get what I'm saying. Yeah. Reggie Powers.
I was going to say Reggie Powers.
I just wanted to steal it from you.
I was going to say that. You jerk. I think it's going to be Reggie Powers. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'll do, just for the sake of not having the same name, Kendall Dolby.
Great pick.
Yeah.
Great pick. I'm actually excited to see him at corner. I'm really dying to know what he looks like there.
Yeah.
And I'm also just dying to see how many times we look on the field and, hey, Kendall Daniels, Reggie Powers, Kendall Dolby are on the field at the same time.
Yeah.
I
can't help but cheese about that. It's going to be fun.
That is going to be fun. Let's say, who is, I don't want to say X Factor. I don't want to say X Factor. Who is who is by week six, I think in the vein of even like Robert Spears Jennings and Eli Bowen were these two guys a year ago that by week six, week seven were the guys that had really emerged that we weren't talking about a ton during the preseason. Who's an X factor or not an X factor? Who is a breakout star that even not even that we're not talking about now, but like a guy that is going to be a top five most important guy on this defense by week six, week
I'm
seven.
I'm taking this telepathy right from you. I can see this is who you're talking about too. It's Dominic Williams.
That's not who I was thinking.
Dang it. But, that's what. Yeah.
I love the pick.
Yeah. Dominic Williams. It. I think just hearing what he's done over the offseason and like typically, I mean, you know what you're getting from Jaden Jackson. Like the guy is a stone. He's just a, you're not rolling that guy. I tried. That was just awful. So bad.
You ought to do better than that.
You ought to do better. Anyways, I think Dominic Williams is a guy that kind of gets lost in the shuffle a little bit. Like when you talk about the defensive line, even though he's probably going to be one of your starters, I just think he's going to end up being a staple and somebody that's like when Herbstreit is breaking down a play and talking about why this play happened and talks about who actually created the play, it's going to be Williams. Like he's going to be in a lot of those situations.
Normally I love the Dominic Williams pick because I think he'll be a lot better than he was last year. You know me, I want to say Reggie Powers. There's a
and
few
that would
guys.
Be a good that would be a great pick.
It would. I do, but I'm also really high on Peyton Bowen, and I just what is playing time going to look like in the secondary? I'm gonna throw a slightly different one at you, and I'm almost going out on a limb here myself. Danny Okoye.
Okay. Oh, you stole it. Okay, yeah, like that was if you didn't bring that up, that's my guy. That's a 9-1.
I know it
guy.
Is.
I love Danny. Dude, I'm pumped about him. I'm so excited to see what he is. Whenever Brent used the words unleash him on the SEC, I was like, oh yeah, that's I can't wait. Good pick, dude. Love that.
I think at worst he is going to be a third down menace. I really do. I'm higher on him. I think in terms of the guys in the defensive end room outside of our Mason Thomas that I have gotten more, I've gotten higher on than anybody else is Danny Okoye.
Yeah. I think he could be a guy that sneaks up and is your sack leader. I mean, besides our Mason Thomas, like I think that could be a guy given his third down situations. Yeah. He's just got the juice. He just does. Yeah.
let's end it here, Brian. I'm gonna put you on the spot. Regular season, not talking about postseason. What is OU's record at the end of the regular season? Do you want me to go first, or do you want to step out on the ledge first?
You go. I've been very consistent in my answer here, and the closer that we get, the more bold I want to be. But like, I've had 9-3 for like months at this point, and I think I'm holding there just out of I don't want to be the rose-colored glasses fan. Now, when they beat Michigan like a drum in week two, and
you can say that, looking,
yeah, then you know when it's a lot harder to beat teams when you can't when you don't have a guy up in the stands or in your in Central Michigan. No,
my girlfriend and I just watched that. I hadn't actually watched the doc until earlier this week. I hadn't actually seen it. I've now watched it.
Yeah.
Sorry, but
yeah.
It's
nuts. But yeah, no, I'll go 9-3. I'll go 9-3, and I think the team can. I think you could see 10-2. I don't think that that's like, it's not. 6 months ago, I would have said no. That's not reasonable. That's not unreasonable. I could see that path. I really could. So 9-3.
I'm locking in 9-3. I'm locking in 9-3. I think if this team is healthy, there's kind of no excuses not to win 9 games. And I know this schedule is hard, but I just even going through some of these numbers and stuff the last few days, and even seeing like in my mind for some reason the defense was really bad at giving up explosive plays through the air last year. That was like the one thing they were bad at. But even as a whole, I see like, oh man, even with how bad their offense was last year, yeah, like this defense was really good in almost every metric. And that's right. What I'm even predicting. I'm predicting the offense to be above average. I'm not even predicting it to be elite, which I think it could, which I think is on, right. It's not unreasonable. I think 9-3 like should be the expectation. I do.
Yeah.
I think that is, well, it's attainable.
It is. And here's the thing. This is something that doesn't get talked about enough. And so I'm going to throw it out there. On the waves, you heard it here first. The thing that's not talked about enough going into the year is with Brent Venables calling plays and having 4 years of system guys, the teams that you're playing against that people are viewing Oklahoma are viewing as like probably going to lose games. Arch Manning is not very, he's not all that experienced. Especially not in that situation. That's not a gimme. Alabama's starting a true freshman or a redshirt freshman. That's not a gimme. You've got a lot of young guys that are going to have to deal with that. The Lenora Sellers, the Joey Aguilars, the Garrett Nussmeyers, like those games to me look more like, you're going to have to play a well-rounded game. Like you're not, it's going to be more difficult for outliers, but with young quarterbacks, I like Oklahoma's odds a little bit better than probably the mainstream.
It's a really good point. And also even if you restrict it, not only just to guy, like even if you go a step further, not only just guys with experience, but guys who started for the SEC, like returning starters on OU schedule from a year ago, It's Garrett Nussmeyer and Lenora Sellers.
That's it, man.
That's it.
Yep.
And I do think that matters. I think that now OU's in the same boat too with John Mateer, right?
Sure.
So like,
yeah.
But from a defensive perspective, from a Venable scheming, the other thing is looking through the depth chart at guys on offense too, to some extent, but particularly on defense, the amount of guys who have now been in the system a minimum of 2 years, but some of them 3 years, and like a lot of guys who have been in the, like a lot of the guys who are going to be stepping on the field have been in Venable's system at least a year, if not two or three. And that matters. That matters. I think I'm locking in 9-3 and feel pretty good about that.
Yep. I like it.
That's going to do it for us here on this episode of the Oklahoma Drill. Appreciate you guys tuning in. As always, you can always subscribe to our OU Insider YouTube channel. Get new episodes, not only of our podcast, but everything we are doing here on the OU Insider YouTube channel. You become a VIP member over at OU Insider, our website, through On3 and Rivals today. The season starts in 9 days. 9 days. Never a better time to become a member than right now. Brian, Mr. Community, I appreciate you as always. Appreciate you guys out there. We'll be back next week to preview Illinois State, the season opener. We'll be back next week to preview the season opener.
Wow.
That's where we are. That's where we are in the year. You guys aren't going to want to miss it. Appreciate y'all as always. We'll see you guys next time on the Oklahoma Drill. Until then, take it easy.
Don't mess with me right now.